This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
Get Carmen and Yurko podcasts on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
I'd like you to meet a real inspiration.
Carmen and Yurko, ESPN 1000.
Hope everyone's having a great day. Yurk's off this week. Jeff Meller is sitting in before Waddle and Sylvie duties as audio man a little later today. We'll crosstalk with the boys in about an hour. If you want to ring us up, 312-332-3776. And vote on the Twitter poll today, and you can call us to talk about how you feel about it. At Carmen DeFalco is where you're going to find it. How would you feel if MLB players started sitting out after accruing key service time this season? Wouldn't bother me at all. Annoyed but understanding, mad as hell. Annoyed but understanding is winning the web poll right now, or running first anyway, with 46.4% of the vote. Wouldn't bother me at all. Second with 32.4%.
That's where I voted, Carm.
Wouldn't bother me at all. Yeah, I'm between sort of annoyed but understanding, but I think that's kind of where I'd vote. I can't vote on my own poll on Twitter. I'd be like slightly annoyed, but I would totally get it. It would give the owners a taste of their own medicine. A mad as hell running last with just 21.2%, although that's gone up a tick since we last updated the poll about 20 minutes ago.
It's funny because I hadn't really thought about it until you pointed out to me that Joel Sherman had wrote about it.
Yeah, over the weekend.
And I love it. And certainly as a sports fan, I want the best players to play. But I do hate the fact that the CBA that the MLBPA has with the MLB has put them in a position where they have to do this stupid dance where, you know, front offices can't say, listen, we're deliberately, you know, keeping our player in the minor leagues for 10 days because we want that extra year of service time. I hate the fact that their free agency is dependent upon that.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And like when you know a player like Chris Bryant is ready to play in the major leagues, I hate the fact that I'm conflicted because my favorite team, yes, I want them to have a very good player under their control for, you know, an extra year of a year when they're in their prime. I understand that. I want that as like a fan of a team.
Because it benefits
that's,
you.
That's the selfish,
aspect
part of it.
Absolutely.
As a fan. But I also say, well, what if I was in their position? How much would that suck to know that you're ready, you're the best available player, you deserve to be on a roster, and a team is doing what the Cubs did to Chris Bryant, what the Astros did to George Springer, what the Red Sox did to Mookie Betts. Like, it happens all the time across baseball because it's just become the norm.
And these are big market teams that are doing it too. It's not just the small market teams, like exploiting a loophole.
Mm-hmm.
These are big market teams. It is not fair. And I've said that for quite some time. The selfish fan in me says, well, it makes sense because you're gaining a crucial year of control, but it is simply not fair. And anyone wondering what we're talking about, for the uninitiated, it's just all about service time and how these teams manipulate it. By basically keeping a guy down in the minor leagues for 10 days, they buy an entire extra season. It is that ludicrous. It is that preposterous. It's been in place for a long time, and teams have exploited it for a long time. And I did read the note. Joel Sherman's a very thoughtful baseball writer and has been for a long time, from the New York Post in his newsletter. And I read it over the weekend as he was writing about the guys that have decided to bow out. He wrote, expect the number to continue rising, and it's not going to stop after the regular season begins July 23rd. Agents and team executives spoken to anticipate a decision-making tactic akin to when a college football player sits out a bowl game because the risk of injury prior to the NFL draft outweigh the reward. So this isn't maybe as much as just like a petty thing where, okay, now I'm going to give you a taste of your own medicine. He's equating it more to what college football players do. He writes, in the case of baseball, there is an expectation that wavering players might decide against continuing to play should they reach certain service time thresholds. Why take on the additional risk? One person who advises players said, I think once players reach graduation day, you're going to see opt-outs. Those graduation days involved reaching necessary service time levels for items such as arbitration, free agency, and fully vesting in the pension plan. Service time is the lifeblood of the sport. Accumulating it brings value. That's why the union fought to assure players would receive service time commensurate with what they earned in 2019, even if no games were played in 2020. And then he goes through some specific examples. George Springer, one of them, Mookie Betts. George Springer needs 2 days in this truncated season to accrue. 2 days. Yep. That's it. Now, I can't see George Springer with the great Houston Astros team, whatever you think about them, deciding to say after July 24th, I'm not going to play anymore. But it would be interesting if some players like Chris Bryant or Springer or Mookie Betts decides to stay. Now, the problem is they're all sort of on contenders. But it'd be interesting to see if they would say, oh, yeah, you did it to me, and now I'm going to do it to you.
Yeah, if it like it would seem much more likely for a player who was on a bad team or maybe just for whatever reason, you know, the Astros get off to a rocky start. And in a 60-game season, that's very difficult to overcome. You know what I mean? Like, that's hard to make up.
If you're 5-10, you might be in trouble.
It sounds ridiculous, but 5-10 start could really hamstring you because it's much harder to make up ground, you know, over a 60-game season.
You've already played 20% of your
season.
More than that, you know?
It would be truly fascinating to me if the players had the, you know, the opportunity to go ahead and do this. And I would say, you know what? I would applaud them because I would say it serves every front office out there right. For, like you said, it's a loophole. It was never in good faith. That's the problem I have, is the whole terminology of good faith. Because we know that it's not in good faith when a team holds a player like Chris Bryant down. And yes, I don't expect Chris Bryant to do that because not only I feel like he's the type of guy who would look at his teammates.
Yeah,
and even though I truly believe his teammates would understand if he chose to do it, most of them in the locker room would be like, look, this is a business. We understand it. I don't think Chris Bryant's the type of guy who would actually do that. But
I don't either.
But honestly, I would not fault him if he did.
How would you feel if a player did that during this baseball season? One of these guys that had it, you know, put on them when they were young. They were held down just to gain an extra year. Where they weren't going to be able to hit free agency as early. How would you feel if they decided to turn it back on for front offices this year? 312-332-3776. A lot of fans might just think it's completely petty and that it's not in the spirit of the sport. And I do think you bring up a good point, Jeff. Like, it would probably be hard, I think, for a lot of guys because they might fear what their teammates really do think about it. Like, it's easy. It's one thing to say, well, they'd all understand because they all know it's a business, but that might be a tough sell. Like, part of me thinks I'm trying to put myself in that situation. I wish I was as good at baseball as Chris Bryant. I'm trying to put myself in that position. Like, I'd be mad and I filed a grievance against the Cubs and I lost it and I'd be mad as hell. But how would I walk into those other 24 guys and say, you know what, guys, I'm going to stick it to them now and I'm going to bail. Like, all played sports growing up to a certain level, and you were part of a team.
Yes.
Like, I would feel bad doing that to those guys.
And I think Chris Bryant would, and I think there's lots of players who would. Now, maybe there's a few individuals who, in the right circumstance, would not have a problem at all. They'd be like, you know what? This sucks. I don't like, you know. And you know what? Maybe, too, as it unfolds, if the testing and the test results don't come back as frequently as MLB originally promised, maybe that makes it easier for a player like Chris Bryant to say, you know what? This isn't what we promised.
Right.
And, you know, even though I love all the guys in this locker room, the reality is it's not in my best interest. So maybe the circumstances will make it easier for other players to opt out. It will be fascinating, though. And I love the fact that, you know, the best laid plans of mice and men often go awry. This could be, you know, every front office has been trained and conditioned to do this until, you know, nobody can foresee a pandemic sneaking in here and completely throwing everything in upheaval.
The only thing that's alleviated a little bit recently was, you know, you could go back a couple of off seasons ago and look at back-to-back off seasons where there was some serious salary repression with the key free agents. And you've seen younger players.
Yes.
You know, like, the White Sox haven't had to deal with this with Aloy and Luis Robert because they signed them to extensions. They didn't have to worry about the service time manipulation.
Yeah.
You know, so some of it's been alleviated a little maybe because of that, but it has been a loophole that the owners in the front offices have used to their advantage for a long time. Larry's in Frankfurt on ESPN 1000. What's up, Larry?
Hey, guys. I would be completely for players doing that because I'm usually on the player side, but the only thing I will say, and I hate sticking up for owners for anything, but the only thing I will say is that shame on the union for not seeing that loophole. This is a CBA that was voted on. That loophole was in there that the owners saw, and when the players voted on it, they didn't see it. So it's, you know, it falls on the players. They're not doing anything against the rules. The owners are not doing anything wrong. It's a loophole that they saw. that they're doing and the union didn't see. So that's the only thing I'd say.
It's a loophole that should be closed with this next round of bargaining, if you ask me, Larry. It's a good point. Thank you.
Larry, you're right. But the reality is this goes back, I don't know how many CBAs, this goes back
to the late 80s.
I was going to say since Curt Flood, basically, or like, I mean, like shortly after Curt Flood won his lawsuit, then they came up with the whole service time.
I believe it goes back to the 80s, Jeff, when they were negotiating a deal in the 80s and the union like won an
extra. The collusion case?
Well, it might have been. And I think they won like an extra year of arbitration maybe. Okay. But what the owners did was slide in this loophole then.
Yes.
You know, that maybe they were forecasting and say someday this could really be an advantage to us. I don't know. Maybe there was nothing malicious about it.
The truth is.
But that's, I think, it all goes back to a certain case in the 80s where the players felt like they were getting a win, but then this service time, this clock was added, and it has come back to haunt the players.
But let's be honest, too. It wasn't always that way, because there was a time, I do recall, in the 90s, when good players, good young players, if they had a dynamite spring training, they would break camp. It wasn't like unheard of. And then at some point, I mean, I don't know if it was directly, you know, correlated to Billy Beane and Moneyball.
But at some point,
right around when you started hiring, you know, every front office was run by an Ivy League graduate. All of a sudden, it became, well, yeah, this is obvious. You're not going to bring a player up for 10 days and then cost yourself a year of his prime on the back end. Again, smart business, and I don't think it was necessarily always the owner's intention to do so, but it's become, you know, they've taken advantage of it beyond what it was ever intended to do. And so part of me would really love a lot of players being like, we're going to take our 5 to 10 days and then see you. We're out.
The timeline of it is interesting. You're right, because it probably is something that really, if you studied the history of it, you'd probably find this started happening when, like you said, all of a sudden there was an influx of Ivy League brains and very analytic people, and the surge in revenue and where salaries were going.
Yeah.
And these very smart mathematical minds all of a sudden started reading through the language, and they saw the loophole, and they said, well, wait a minute. We get an extra year of control by holding a guy down for 2 weeks? It makes too much sense for us. And then once one person does it, we know what these leagues are like. Everybody else sort of jumps on board, and they say, oh, yeah, that does make a lot of sense.
And think about it, too. Like, another thing is opening day across baseball, that's an easy ticket sell for every franchise. It doesn't matter. Like, that's, you know what?
That's
you know, you know, if not sellout, you're going to have one of your biggest crowds of the year. So what better too than to hold down your hot prospect that everybody, you know, your entire fan base is aware of, and then you get to have his debut become a huge boon at the ticket office.
They get to double dip, basically.
Exactly. So like all of these unintended consequences that every Ivy Leaguer finally, you know, figured out, and they're like, okay, and who gets screwed? The players every time.
So absolutely.
That's why I hadn't even thought about it, but when you pointed to me to Joel Sherman's article over the weekend, I was like smitten. I was like, I hope somebody gives somebody a taste of their own medicine.
And that's why we're very pro-player, most of us around here anyway, and we certainly were during the entire controversy of the negotiating of, you know, the owners and the players the last couple months in baseball. If you've got a thought on it, would you be upset? Do you feel like the players would be totally in the right? Let us know, 312-332-3776. In about 15 minutes, we'll check in with Pat Boyle, talk Hawks, what he's hearing about Corey Crawford, and if it's possible that Corey Crawford still could come back, be between the pipes for the Hawks in this series against Edmonton, because if you do want him to win in advance, there's probably very little shot without Crow playing in net for the Blackhawks. And also something from yesterday that we touched on a little, but still a good talking point. We brought it up during Crosstalk with Cap. How down are you on the Bears and their offensive weapons? Is the rest of the league just hating on the Bears, or is the national media hating on the Bears, or are they definitely onto something? We can continue to discuss. 312-332-3776. It's Carmen and Yurko. We're coming right back.
Carmen and Yurko.
Follow at Carmen DeFalco and at Yurko64 on Twitter.
On ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Boyle, talking Hawks in 12 minutes. Waddle and Sylvie up in about 40 or so to Crosstalk. Jeff Meller's in for Yurko today. Chris Black's going to be in tomorrow. Yurk's back next week. He's on vacay this week. Remember, we're on Twitch, twitch.tv, search ESPN 1000, Chicago. Bill Barnwell ranked all the weapons team by team in the NFL. Remember, he took out quarterback. It's like, it's basically if you took, he said, every skill position, dumped it onto a team with an average offensive line, yep, an average quarterback, and an average head coach, right? You can't have Kyle Shanahan calling your plays.
Correct.
Or Sean McVay. You don't have the Dallas Cowboys line. You don't have Patrick Mahomes or Deshaun Watson or Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson. That's the key here, right? How do they fare? How do they stack up? And, I mean, come on, anybody that's surprised where the Bears are, I mean, how could you be after last year? The Bears ranked 28th. They're the fifth worst, isn't it?
Well, you know what I found interesting, too, is
probably about right.
Did you see the notice, too, there? He gave you he's been doing this for 3 years now. I believe it's the third year.
Yeah.
The previous year ranks where he had the skill positions for the Bears. It's not like Bill Barnwell is some Bears hater.
He had him at 9th and 17th in the last couple of years.
So it's not like he's going out of his way to hate on the Bears here. He's been very generous. You know, to me, I was trying to think back. I was like, 9th? That seems
high.
A little high when you consider what they've done now over the last couple of years. Remember, that would have been Matt Nagy's first year as head coach.
That would have been going into the first year, right?
Exactly.
Which seems very high, actually. I almost can't even believe it.
Like, I know they had signed Taylor Gabriel. Like, that wasn't, like, some huge pickup that was, you know, I mean, Trey Burton.
They just signed Allen Robinson.
They had, yeah. So it was
Burton.
And you had Tariq Cohen, who they drafted that year, right? That would have been his rookie year.
It would have been. You had Jordan Howard,
who was coming off a nice season.
Very good year, yeah.
But so you look at it, and, like, that to me was a very generous grade.
Agreed.
Coming from, you know, from Bill Barnwell at that time, and now, I look at the skill positions, and that's part of the reason, like, there's a lot of problems on offense for the Bears. Like, sure, Nick Foles can be an upgrade over Mitch Trubisky, but the offensive line is a huge question mark that I think a lot of people are relying on Juan Castillo to fix, and maybe he can, but it's not like they had some schlub as the offensive line coach prior to Juan Castillo getting there. All I heard about was how Harry Heidstad was some type of, you know, one of the best in football.
The O-line whisperer. Look, three of the five All-Pros last year played under the guy at Notre Dame. Three.
Yeah.
Is it possible that coaching philosophies just don't mesh? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Like, that's very possible. Whatever Harry Heidstad was teaching, maybe it just didn't jive with how Matt Nagy wanted it taught or explained, or maybe it didn't fit well with Matt Nagy's system. Like, that is certainly possible. But when you look and you see three of the five All-Pros across the offensive line play for the guy in college, you're kind of like,
That's what I'm saying. So color me skeptical when you say that Juan Castillo is going to step in and be the solution, because they made no real additions in free agency or in the draft. I mean, sure, Jermaine Ifedi has a pedigree as a former first rounder who sucked for the Seahawks, who couldn't stop, you know,
the penalties killed him.
Exactly. Now, but I'm also somebody who understands that if you take a guy who was positioned at tackle and move him inside, sometimes that can unlock him.
Sure.
And so I'm optimistic that that can be the case. But offensively, it's not just, like, again, very pedestrian skill players, in my opinion, and a line that's kind of eh. And then a quarterback situation where you're relying on a guy who caught a heater, won this. It's undeniable. I cannot take away the fact that he won the Super Bowl MVP against the Patriots, and I still can't comprehend how it happened. And he's never started more than 11 games in his career. So you're relying on a lot to turn around this offense, and I don't think anything Barnwell wrote is off base.
I don't think so either, and I think it's probably an appropriate spot to slot them, because outside of Allen Robinson, who I think you can really count on, I just don't know where else you can automatically assume that you're going to get major production. Let's face it, Anthony Miller, as much as we all like him, is a big question mark.
Absolutely.
Can't stay healthy. He's had a little bit of a problem with drops.
Route running was an issue. Whether or not, I don't know if it was Mitch's fault or his fault, but there was certainly some issues we saw last year creep up where he seemed to be in the wrong place.
So, you know, you're probably talking about, as Barnwell wrote it, just a permanent slot receiver that can contribute a little, but might never be anything as special as they were hoping for. You haven't seen enough from Wims and Ridley yet. Again, you're just hoping. So as you're evaluating it now, you can't just say, well, I want to be nice to the Bears, and I'll put them at 15th because I think these three guys might be good. The only guy you know is going to come to play every week, week in and week out, is Allen Robinson. Tariq Cohen is a nice little gadget guy. That's all he is.
Of course.
David Montgomery didn't have the kind of year people thought. Maybe it's the offensive line, but he didn't have the kind of year people thought. He didn't contribute that much. So the tight end position stinks, quite frankly. I mean, and maybe Cole Kmet helps that, but he's a rookie. How high can you actually place the Bears when you really evaluate what they have offensively?
Carm, like when you look at all the players that people want to get excited about, we've made a lot of excuses for guys. David Montgomery, had David Montgomery not been, because it, had Ryan Pace not traded away early picks, nobody would really give David Montgomery, you know, the time of day. The reason he got a lot of people excited was because he was, quote, the Bears' first pick, which was a third-round pick because Ryan Pace had traded away his first and second rounder that year. That's the reason people made a big deal about David Montgomery. You should be able to find a productive running back in the NFL draft. Sure, it was maybe it was the offensive line's fault last year. Maybe it was the play calling from Matt Nagy. But the reality is, usually when a running back is good, or like, not good, but when a running back has is great, you see glimpses early at some point during his rookie year.
Well, the pick later, the kid in Buffalo, Devin Singletary, right?
Yeah.
He was the next pick. Go look at the year he had last year.
So, and again, maybe it's the play calling, maybe it's the offensive line, but outside of one circle route that David Montgomery ran in the opener against the Packers, there was really no plays that he made me go, wow, okay, we've got something here. Maybe I stand corrected. There's a play in preseason, but that's preseason.
I mean, yeah, listen, I think that he's hard to tackle, which is good. Is he slightly limited? Yeah, he can be productive if you've got a solid running game, if you've got some kind of an offensive line with a philosophy. And, you know, you've got guys in front of him that can help. David Montgomery could be fine, I think. I really do.
Yes,
he probably caught a ball a little bit better than we thought, too. He's hard to tackle. Is he special? He's probably not special.
Which is, okay, so that's what you have there. And then, as you pointed out, the tight end position is an absolute mess. I know a lot of people like Cole Kmet because, you know, and he's a local kid. That's, you know, we're all rooting for him.
Yeah.
But I need to see what he's capable of. At the pro level. And Jimmy Graham, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Like, Jimmy Graham is, since he had he tore his patellar tendon, he has not been the same player, and he's dealt with drops too. So he's a big target in the red zone. That's what you're getting with Jimmy Graham. If you're expecting anything more from him at this point in his career, then you're probably drinking whatever Ryan Pace was drinking when they were paired up back in 2013 in New Orleans.
You'll never, you know, there's no chance of seeing the guy that was truly dynamic everywhere on the field, lined up out wide when he was young in New Orleans, maybe that first year in Seattle. I mean, that guy's long gone. You do hope, I think, for the best, just, you know, as a red zone target. If he can help you pop with a few touchdowns in the red zone, that's basically what you're expecting out of Jimmy Graham. I mean,
I think you guys are going to be surprised this year, Jimmy Graham.
What does that mean, Mark? What does that mean? Do you think?
I think he'll be he'll be more of a factor than
how they'll use him in the middle of the field.
Yeah,
he's not as explosive though as he was, and that's why, like, I'm concerned. You paid a lot of money for a guy who, at one time, was, you know, it was him and Gronk. They were the elite tight end class in football. But I don't think the athletic ability that made him that player is there anymore. And so maybe if he's forced the ball, he may put up some numbers, but I don't think he's going to be a huge threat. I really hope I'm wrong. I just don't think he's explosive enough to be that guy.
Over under 50 receptions for Graham.
I'd say under.
I think it really depends on what the rest of the guys are capable of. Because I think it's possible he gets 60 or 70 balls, but if he's only giving you 10 or 11 yards per catch, that somebody's got to catch the ball in an offense. And Allen Robinson's, you know, he's a good threat on the outside. But everything else, I don't know, like, if Anthony Miller only catches 40 balls, then somebody's going to have to catch 60 on this offense, right?
Maybe that's Ridley and Wims. I don't know. Maybe that's... what's the young kid, the speedster from Baylor? Why am I blanking on his name?
Well, also Cole Kmet, too, factor in.
Yeah, Cole Kmet. I mean, look, you'd think that Cole Komet's going to probably be a featured part of this offense, right, guys? I mean, I would think.
If I had to bet right now, he would have more receptions at the end of the year than Jimmy Graham would. If I had to bet. I would be comfortable going with Komet over Graham.
Yeah, like if you're making that prop bet, I think I'm with you on that, Chris. Like if you said you had got to pick, here's the prop bet, pick one. Who's going to have more receptions at the end of the year? I think I'd go Komet too.
Interesting.
Is that That's crazy?
No, I don't think it's crazy. I think I would still lean towards Jimmy Graham just on his history.
I mean, he was targeted 60 times last year. He had 38 receptions. I mean,
I know, but
you're telling me a rookie tight end can't at least give you 40, 45, close to 50?
He could, but the thing is, with Graham and Komet, they're probably going to be on the field quite a bit together as well. And Jimmy Graham's going to be, you know, he's going to be targeted more often than Komet, I believe.
Well, and he's not going to block, I wouldn't think. So he's going to
be. Not really.
True. If they're on the field together, that takes some away then probably from Cole
Komet. I don't think it's outrageous, but I think it's more likely in order for that to happen, that'll be because Jimmy Graham is injured. And that's certainly not out of the realm of possibility.
Cap thinks an 11-5 season, man. To me, it's hard to get there. It's awfully optimistic. You know, can they win 9 and get an extra, you know, with an extra playoff team now? Can you sneak in? Yeah. They won 8 last year with a great defense and an absolutely putrid offense. If Nick Foles can improve them a little bit, or if somehow it's Trubisky, I should play McCown real quick, too. I'll play that here. If it's somehow Trubisky, I mean, like, can they get, can you squeeze another 2 wins, 3? I don't know. This Josh McCown was on with Waddle and Silva yesterday. I'll play this real quick, and then we'll get to Pat Boyle in a couple of minutes. But McCown thinks that Mitch still has a slight edge over Foles.
I think given this situation, you know, it's hard because I don't know that Nick's had an opportunity to kind of compete and earn the job, so to speak. So it would be, I guess it'd be hard to kind of not go with what you know in Mitch, because you've played with Mitch before. So it would seem as though, you know, unless they, you know, get a chance to go out and really compete in a preseason, that it'd be hard not to play Mitch. But at the same time, you know, I know there are those guys there in the building that are familiar with Nick and what he can do. And you know, Nick's been in a ton of systems, and he knows how to assimilate fast. So there shouldn't be an issue. So I think had it borne out, you know, over a normal off season, you know, maybe Nick, you know, pushes himself through the front just from experience and kind of just a veteran leadership or whatever. But given that it is now, I don't know. I mean, it seems like maybe Mitch ends up starting the season.
Foles knows the offense just as well, if not better, and they know Nick Foles.
That's the thing, is I understand the thought process from Josh McCown, but as you heard him almost talk himself through it, you wonder, wait a minute, after Nick Foles in a couple of months, will he know the offense better than Mitch already does?
It's a good question. He might already know it better now. 312-332-3776 is the number. We'll talk Hawks with Pat Boyle next.
Did you miss some Carmen and Yurko? You don't have to miss anything. Podcasts are ready on the ESPN Chicago app.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
Jeff Meller's in for Yurk today. Black will be in tomorrow. Yurk's off this week, back on Monday. It's Carmen and Yurko. Pat Boyle in a minute. Talking Hawks. It's been, what, 4 months since the Blackhawks were on the ice. Yurko and I saw them play live against Edmonton, and they beat Edmonton. They hung on for a one-goal win that night. That was March 4th. Then they went and they laid an egg, of course, at Detroit, lost to Detroit.
Oh, I had forgotten about that game. That sucked.
Then they lost to the Blues, and then they had one final game, March 11th, the last time the Hawks were on
the
ice.
When the world all changed.
That's right.
Onto the back to Keith. Return back to him by Taves. Keith and Ron. DeBrincat able to gain the zone with an opening spin. It is Kane, and the tie is broken. And so it becomes the 531st consecutive sellout. Assad is in. Score! It is 3-1. Retrieved by Nylander. Nicely finessed away. Right back in. It's Strome. Strome peeled off. Nylander scores! The plans for San Jose is a great shot made there by Kane, and out of the scramble he's able to poke it home, Patrick Kane, and it is now 5-2. Dish back by Doc, score! A blast that came from Kubalik, who's got 30.
How about Kubalik with 30 on the air? Kaner with a few in that one. 6-2 went over the shark, as Harry used to call him. 6-2. It's been 4 months. And now they're coming back, we hope. Well, we are joined by our buddy Pat Boyle from NBC Sports Chicago. He joins us now on the Corona Hotline on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. PB, how are you?
I'm good, Carm. Jeff, how are you doing?
I'm good, PB. How are you?
It's good to hear. Good to hear Hawks highlights, isn't it?
It certainly is. I mean, we've been seeing quite a bit of the highlights the last 4 months with running all the rewind games.
Those
and all
are the really
classics.
Good highlights.
Those are the really good. You know, what's funny. We're talking to Jonathan Toews yesterday, and he said this is the first time in his life where he's been able to just kind of decompress and take a step back from hockey, because since he was a little kid till now, you know, everything has been scripted. You know, once the season is over, you're beginning to think about next year, and then the off seasons get smaller. And so he took some time and actually watched a lot of those classics from 10, 13, and 15, and really appreciated kind of what they accomplished and what it took to get to the top. And so it was kind of interesting to hear him reflect a bit on just what he was doing and kind of putting in perspective what this team has accomplished in the last decade.
Yeah, Pat, that's an interesting point, because, like, I have to imagine for a lot of players on the Hawks, because they have been skating since they were 3 years old, this has probably been the longest time any of them have gone without, you know, whether it's 2 or 3 months of extended period of time without actually skating.
Probably since Pee Wee, right?
No,
like, since they got the skates on their feet.
Right. And you know, talking to some of the guys, if they went back to Canada, once things loosened up in their part of the country, you know, maybe 2 months into quarantine, they were able to go back to their childhood rink and get a little bit of work in there. But like you said, this is the first time a bulk of them have been off the ice for 4.5 months. And, you know, they started coming back to Fifth Third Arena a couple of weeks ago. And so that's why I really think they hit the ground running yesterday. The pace of yesterday's practice and today's was impressive. You could tell, A, they kept themselves in shape off the ice, and that also, you know, getting a couple of weeks in here in Chicago during the phase two portion of this comeback was really working out well for them and allowing them to, you know, try to find that speed that the Stanley Cup playoffs certainly ratchets up to, and it's something that's it's tough to replicate, certainly after being off for 4.5 months.
PB, let's talk about the Crawford situation. When you hear unfit to play, like, you know, to hear Cullerton say that yesterday, it's jarring almost. But then you realize that there's language from the NHL that, you know, they basically wrote in that the teams are prohibited from talking medically whatsoever about these players in phase three and then into phase four when the resumption actually happens. So, you know, you've got all this ambiguity. I think it leads to wild speculation. I think it makes it hard on the organization and teammates of these players. Why does it have to be this way? And would it be better if they would just clarify it a little bit more and we would stop with all the guesswork?
Well, it's funny. Last year, when training camp started, you'll remember the Blackhawks were one of the first teams in the NHL to lift their upper body, lower body, outer body terminology that they were using for medical issues. And they decided that as an organization, they were going to tell you exactly what it is: concussion, ankle injury, shoulder, what have you. And to end the speculation, a lot of that because of the speculation that has been around Corey and some of his injuries over the years. So they took that step. This is more an NHL thing. This is a COVID-19 situation. It probably has to do with HIPAA laws as well. I understand what you're saying. But if they put out an injury report and five guys are on it and there are four of them have shoulder, ankle, knee, what have you, and one guy is undisclosed, we're pretty much going to know, or at least guess or speculate that one player is, you know, probably tested positive for COVID-19. So
exactly what baseball's doing, Pat.
Pardon me?
So exactly what baseball's doing.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, it's frustrating. I'm trying to to me, it's like you put your reporter's cap on and you try to figure everything out. You know, Corey, they had their second child in late April. To my understanding, he stayed here in Chicago. He wasn't on that opt-out list that players, for whatever reason, could choose to not participate in the return to play. He wasn't on that list. He's also a pending unrestricted free agent. So part of me was thinking, because yesterday was the first day after the CBA was ratified that you could do an extension. So I thought, all right, maybe he's using the leverage he has right now. Because let's face it, without him, their chances of getting by the Oilers are diminished greatly. Maybe he's trying to get an extension done. But that's not the feeling I got from listening to Stan Bowman and Jeremy Colleton, and we're going to hear from Colleton here coming up in a couple more minutes. But again, they're really dancing around all these topics when it comes to the health of Corey Crawford.
So, Pat, that leads me to the question then. Look, if Delia or Subban, you know, if for whatever reason, like the Hawk fan in me says, boy, without Crawford, like for the long term, I cannot envision any scenario. Forget the fact, I don't want them to beat Edmonton if Crawford's not in the lineup, because I don't see the scenario where they can make a run at the Cup. And, like, that enticing prospect of a 12.5% chance of winning the lottery, like, for me then, as a Hawks fan, I'm glad to have hockey back in my life, but I don't want more than 5 games if Corey Crawford is not going to play in the Stanley Cup playoff. Is that a logical way to approach it?
I think you're looking at the numbers, right? You're saying that they have a better chance of getting Lafreniere with 12.5% than they do at hoisting the Cup when it's all said and done. And I don't disagree with that. Yeah. With Corey, you know, maybe they have a slightly better chance than 12. I don't even think they have a better chance than 12% to win it all. I really think the odds are stacked against him. To put the importance of Crawford into perspective, I know you guys get into analytics. If you want to jump down the hockey geek rabbit hole with me for just a second,
yes.
The Hawks gave up the most inner slot shots against, the most slot passes against, the most cycle chances against, and they had the highest expected goals against of any team in the league. But Corey, because of his play, he was seventh best in the league in goals saved above expectation. So he saved them almost a half goal per game. Translation, they were defending nonstop, giving up high danger chances left and right, and it was only Crawford and Leonard that kept them afloat. And remember, they were still 12th in the West when the pause occurred. So it wasn't like all that great goaltending had them in a playoff spot. So goaltending has been vital. They've been the most important pieces to this team, you could say to any team, just by looking at those numbers. And without Crow in the net, and let's just say he returns in a week or two, how can he get up to speed for the playoffs and the qualifying round with like a week to go? I mean, if best case scenario, if he returned in a week. So the odds are really against them. It was a tough bit of news yesterday, and you know, we'll see if anything improves here over the next few days.
Can't be said any better than that, really. I mean, the numbers and everything else. You know, if you think Corey Crawford's the problem, I don't know what you're watching, but without him, absolutely no chance. PB, good catching up, buddy. We'll talk soon. Okay.
Hey Pat,
all right, take care,
when's
guys.
When does the hockey show come back on at ESPN 1000?
Oh, thanks for mentioning that, Jeffrey Miller. July 25th.
So what is that, next Saturday?
Next Saturday, 9 a.m.
Next Saturday, 9 a.m. Perfect. Good to have you back,
buddy. The Hawks will be in Edmonton by then, and we will be less than a week away from their first game against the Oilers on August 1st.
Sounds great. Keep our fingers crossed that this all happens. We'll talk to you soon, PB. Thanks.
All right. Take care, guys.
There he is, Pat Boyle. Yeah, he and Brian Hanley will have the hockey show coming back a week from Saturday. That's great news. Every Saturday morning at 9. The whole HIPAA law thing, like they say, well, you know, the HIPAA laws. I don't really know the laws, but don't the HIPAA laws prevent a doctor from releasing?
Exactly.
Like if I'm a reporter and I find out that a player broke an ankle, like, and I report it, I don't like. I'm not violating HIPAA laws. I'm not a doctor.
I think sports organizations would have the right because, like, the injury reports, they tell you what injuries they have.
I mean, like, HIPAA laws say that the doctor can't release patient information.
Exactly.
Public. It's like the First Amendment. People are like, wait a minute, you're violating my First Amendment. Well, no, like, my boss can tell me to not wear that shirt to work. And it's not a violation of my First Amendment
right. You can say whatever you want to say. It doesn't mean you can say what you want to say without consequences.
Right. Like, the First Amendment protects you from, like, from the government infringing on your freedom to say things. Like, it's not a First Amendment. Like, I don't think HIPAA laws really apply here. I mean, I just think it leads to all this wild speculation, and it makes things more complicated than it needs to be.
And the weird thing is, we do not know right now if Corey Crawford, if there's any chance he returns and plays in the playoffs right now. It doesn't sound like it based on what the tea leaves were trying to read, but the reality is that we don't know this, and so it's for the next couple of weeks, unless we get clarity from my guest Corey Crawford, unless Corey Crawford wants to address this and tell people directly, it doesn't sound like we're going to get any clarification from the Hawks.
Like the Kopech stuff, it's pretty crazy. All right, we're coming right back.
See what Carmen and Yurko are talking about on Twitch.
Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago today.
This is Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
We've been without sports for so long. I'm excited just watching highlights of these guys practice. I'm watching Kirby Doc just
crash the net.
Who is that he's turning inside out? Is that Subban? I'm not sure, but just, oh my God, just beautiful hands. Kirby Doc's going to be a player. I think the Hawks have a good, and they lucked in. Yeah. They kind of lucked into Kirby Doc last year.
They won the lottery to move up a couple of spots.
To move up, like they went up to third, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they definitely went higher than they should have picked.
Luck
into Kirby Doc. And I'm with you, too, at this point. If Corey Crawford's a no-go in this resumption of play, you can forget about it. You're better off with the 1-8 chance to get this Lafreniere kid, who they think is going to be a real franchise player.
Yeah, I heard Cap bring it up earlier. You know, he had Charlie Remelios, was on, and he was mentioning you know Panarin. And just the fact that, you know, how the Hawks regret that. But, if you think back, if you could add an absolute elite winger to pair with Patrick Kane again, like, my goodness, like, I mean, I don't know if Lafreniere is going to be anywhere near what Panarin is. I mean, that would be, great. But just think of, like, if you could pair an elite winger again with Patrick Kane.
I know.
How good they were. I know they lost. They were bounced to Nashville. But they were the best. They were the number one seed that year when they had Panarin on the ice. And I think they maybe overreacted a little too quickly.
Yeah, I was definitely on the wrong side of that. I got to wear that one. Yurko, too. I thought getting... And not that I didn't think Panarin was terrific, but I just thought getting Saad back was going to fix some of the problems that they had in those two previous seasons.
We thought it was going to elevate Taves' game.
That's kind of it. You know, even as good as they were, and they went to a seventh game, and that would have been 16 against St. Louis, and they lost. And then they still, like you said, they were first in the West in 17, but they got bounced so quickly by Nashville. And Taves was trending downwards, and I thought, man, Saad is really going to help. And this is what they need, and he's more of a two-way player than Panarin was, and still is, obviously. But, boy, Panarin's awfully good. Yeah, I'll wear that one. I was way off because that has not helped the way I thought, and I think the way a lot of Hawks fans thought it might help. Certainly the way the front office thought it was going to help. So I'll take my chances 1 out of 8 in landing this Lafreniere kid. Alex Lafreniere, I believe, is his name, over trying to navigate the Western Conference Corey Crawford.
Even if you get hot and you somehow beat the Oilers, that's like, it feels like, I don't see how, like Pat, I think Pat said it, it doesn't seem likely, even with Crawford, that they're going to be able to make a run. But with Crawford, you can maybe fool yourself into believing you can make a run. Without Corey Crawford, you know, the worst case scenario is that, you know, Subban or Delia is in net and they actually advance to the next round and then get bounced.
There's just no chance.
I heard a caller yesterday on Wild and Sylvie. Mm-hmm. He said, you know what? We don't need this guy anyways. Where would he fit?
Who?
The kid there, the
Lafreniere.
And Waddle's like, that's the craziest thing I've heard. Yeah. He's like, you make him fit.
Oh, no, you know what it was? He was he thought he was like pointing out that Stan Bowman might mess it up.
Right. Not take Lafreniere.
But he did say, he's like, where does he fit? Is he going on a third line? And, you know,
he's a top six forward. Don't worry.
You cross that bridge when you get. He's top six somewhere. You don't worry about that. Yeah.
I mean, isn't that kind of crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the wrong way of looking at it.
Before we wrap up, and then we got Crosstalk Murky said a few good almanac nuggets.
Some birthdays today.
Birthdays? What do we got? Today's July 14th.
From The Sopranos. I think he's from The Sopranos. Vincent Pastore. Is he from The Sopranos?
I'm trying to remember who that is.
Oh, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's not from The Sopranos.
Vincent Pastore?
No, you know what? I'm wrong. I'm thinking of someone different. All right,
why are we celebrating him if he's...
He's an American actor.
Forget it. Oh, let's go Jane Lynch.
That's Big Pussy Pump and Absolutely. Okay. You're right. I don't think I knew his name. Vincent Pastore.
Jane
I'm allowed
Lynch?
To say that, by the way, because it is his name.
You can say big.
Jane Lynch is 60 today.
Jane Lynch.
Jane Lynch is a great treasure.
Yes.
Okay.
And she's on so many different shows. She was great on Glee, but she was also on Two and a Half Men. She was fantastic on that.
I feel like, is it just me or did she really burst out with 40-Year-Old Virgin,
yes.
right?
She's yes. Yes.
When she is singing the song to him, the Guadalupe, the gardener from Guatemala, right? The Guatemalan gardener.
What's
that? When she's singing the song, I mean, you can't stop laughing.
I haven't seen it in a while, but you have some really nice cheekbones. Maybe tuck your sack back, put a little,
rouge on
your face.
Tuck your sack back, put a little rouge on.
Say that?
She's unbelievable.
Hey, if he could say...
Pomp and Cero. Yeah. In Role Models, I mean, she is so unbelievably good in Role Models. I mean, she's just a treasure. She really is.
All right, quickly, four Sox have birthdays today. One is an announcer. He turned 73, Steve Stone.
Happy birthday to the Stoney.
Stoney. Former player and also your former manager. He turns 53 today. Robin Ventura.
One of my all-time favorite players.
I take that back. There's only three. And the other one is your ace. He turns 26 today.
Lucas Giolito.
Yeah, and Colin McGregor also has a birthday today. Well, he turns 32.
Proper number 12, and, Irish whiskey.
On this day, we can talk about with Waddle, but in 1970, the All-Star game, Pete Rose ruined Ray Fossey's career
by knocking him out. I tell you that, Pete Rose. We'll talk about it with Waddle coming up next. We're back in just 2 minutes.